This is The Producers, a podcast. The biggest names in audio production, station sound, radio imaging, branding, and voiceover. Interviews, tips, tricks, advice. To be a part of the show, visit RyanOnTheRadio.com. Now, The Producers with Ryan Dreen.
Hey, another podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. I will make the intro and outro very quick. I do have a few people lined up to interview. A couple of them, though, actually were relatively negatively affected, you know, more than just people who were fans of Kid Craddock's passing. For example, Deke over there at Clear Channel Dallas, you know, his world was certainly turned a little upside down, not just on a personal level, which it was, and for a lot of people it was. But, you know, he's going to be the next guest. So we just had to delay his a little bit. But that, you know, we're still working on that interview. Should be the next episode. Good old Cousin Deke. Just a monster talent. He's got his hands in and his voice really in everything. Clear Channel, all over the place. He'll be a really cool guy to talk to. And I plan to actually do an interview, which might be my third out of 59 now, my third in person with the person. Chris Stevens for sure. Dave Bethel. Ironically, and unless I'm forgetting someone, there's Dom Nero. So it'll be my fourth. Anyway, two of the three I've done in person were with people from England. Somehow, though, I can get in the same room with the Brits, just not the Americans. Anyway, Dom Nero was also in person, and that was actually at the Hot 97 studios. That was pretty sweet. So maybe I'll go over and talk to Deke at one of the Clear Channel Dallas studios. Maybe we'll take over Billy the Kid studios or something. Anyway, so Deke's coming up. Got lots more coming your way. There's a few that I'm just not positive on, so I'm not going to throw out any more names yet, but I get these suggestions sent to me all the time, and I thank you very much for that. I put everyone on a list. I've said this in the past. I've really only been turned down a couple times. Now, I think after 59 episodes, I have been turned down probably three or four times, which I'd say is a pretty good success rate. So, you know, there's a chance that who you want to hear from doesn't want to talk to me, but it's pretty unlikely. Anywho, this interview is with Vishwanath B. I'm going to say it right now. I attempted to pronounce his full name in the interview, so you'll hear that coming up in mere minutes. But I don't want to slaughter his name. Anyway, he likes to go by Vish. So he's a producer at Gulf News Network in Dubai. And I love to do the international interview as often as I can, reach out to different producers all over the country. This would be my first foray into the UAE and Dubai, for that matter. So I'm really happy to do that. I'm degreed in history. I love learning about other cultures, and I don't like just reading about them, though. You know, I like to actually talk to people that live it, and that's, I feel, the best way to really understand what life is like in other parts of the globe. So I did spend a good amount of time just sort of discussing life there, you know, as a radio guy, you know, how it might vary, how getting to the profession of radio might have been different than those of us in America or the UK that eventually found our way to our jobs, our career that we've chosen. Talked a little bit about the way the government interacts with media. And then, of course, we get right into the real creative stuff with Vish over there. He's basically the main guy at Radio 2. They have a Radio 1, a Radio 2, a Hindi. Actually, they have five total stations. We'll talk about that more in the interview. So why bother repeating it all right now? Anyway, thanks to Vish so much. I'll make note right now, and then I'll come back and tell you more about it at the end. But if you'd like to peruse, he gave me a whole bunch of fun stuff. Photos, there's more audio to hear later after the interview. There is a show notes page for Vish on my website, so please go check it out, because I appreciate him taking the time. Him and Dragos, actually, who has contributed to my site in the past, probably a guy I need to talk to on the podcast someday. Anywho, they both contributed some good stuff for Vish's show notes page, so you can go check that out on my site, RyanOnTheRadio.com. Otherwise, here we go, fun audio from the one and only, straight from Dubai, Vish B.
Gentlemen,
I know how we do it.
104.1 Dubai and 100.5 Abu Dhabi. The UAE's best hit music.
From the biggest and the best.
This is Justin Timberlake.
This is Nicki Minaj.
This is 305.
Or East Movement.
This is Will I Am.
All the new music I love.
From the UAE's biggest hit music database. Hotwired into your radio. number one for hit music.
The tune, the vibe, the sound.
Radio 1.
We are your variety station with songs like this. Of more music variety.
Radio 2. 99.3 Dubai.
106 Abu Dhabi.
More music variety.
From the world's biggest stars.
Hey, this is Adam Lambert.
You know that I wish that this night would never
be. Hey, this is Carly Rae Jepsen, and you're listening to my song.
We're about to kick off the 9 to 5 no repeat workday with Kenny and Akalia. Radio 2.
In 2007, at London's O2 Arena, one of the world's most legendary bands played their first live show together in 27 years. Led Zeppelin.
There it is. Great production work. In fact, before I even attempt to say his full name, I'll say I don't know a ton about him yet, but the reason he's on the podcast is because I heard his work, and I said, oh, that's a guy I got to talk to, and I want to continue the whole international angle of the producer's podcast. So with that, I welcome in Vishwanath Valakrishnan. How'd I get your name? Was I close?
Well, you missed the B, but that's okay.
say your full name for us so we know exactly how you pronounce it.
Vishwanath Balakrishnan.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to call you, do I call you Vish or?
Just call me Vish. Vish. That's it. Yeah, that's what everybody calls me, Vish.
Right on, man. Well, Vish, welcome to the show. I know you've been working hard over there in Dubai for a while. We'll hear your entire story in a bit. And I know you've listened to the podcast, and I appreciate that, but more than deserved for you to come on and be featured now. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks, man. It's a real big honor for me to be here. I've been listening to the podcast for a really long time. In fact, I was listening last night even. I was listening to, I think, the Mike Madrigal one.
Oh, cool.
It's a real honor for me to be here as well.
Right on. Well, I tell you what, because I think you're going to have an interesting background for us to learn about. First of all, tell us, where are you originally from? Where were you born and maybe raised?
Well, I was born and raised in Mumbai. Okay. In India. I lived the entire first half of my life entirely in Mumbai. I first came to Dubai back in 2002 to finish high school. Strange. But my parents, they were working with an airline, and you know, they kept traveling. And I came back here in 2002. And then I left in 2004 once they were done. And my brother decided to move. I have an elder brother, and he decided to move here. And, because he was here, I thought I could finish my degree here as well. So mm-hmm. I came back in about 2007, I think. Yes, 2007, 2008 is when I came back. I finished my last year of university over here.
So I don't want to go, I don't want to get too personal, but were you, a family of at least some means in Mumbai, or did you have maybe a rough going when you were young? How was that part of your life?
Well, we were middle class. I mean, okay. That's the word. I mean, we weren't poor or anything, but we weren't like of some means for that matter. We were just right in the middle. I was quite lucky that way because I was one of the few people who actually at that stage in my life had the opportunity to move to Dubai because my parents were moving here. So mm-hmm. I was quite lucky as far as that was concerned. And initially when I first came here to do my high school, I hated it because I was so used to Mumbai. I hated it. And I think my mum bore the the maximum brunt of that because I was a teenager and I had raging hormones and I was
acting
very,
like a jackass.
Yeah, acting like a real jackass. And I got used to it. And you know, it, when I first moved to Dubai, it, you know, gave me a completely different perspective as far as, you know, life was concerned itself. And this is a great city as far as I'm concerned. I like being here. It's simpler and it's clean, it's nice, it's got great infrastructure, great things to see around over here.
Let me jump in real quick though. Is it easy to travel? Again, I'm not exactly what you'd call a world traveler, so not at all. But is it easy to move between, let's just say, India and United Arab Emirates? Is it easy to move between those two locations, or is it a big production to just travel?
No, it's actually pretty easy. It's become even more easier since I moved here. It's definitely easy because I mean, there's a UAE has about a 50% population of just Indians.
Okay.
I mean, we rule the roost over here, really.
All right.
There's a lot of expatriates over here. In fact, the entire market is just expatriates, really speaking. I mean, there's about 10% locals. You know, I mean, Emirati people over here. I mean, I'm not sure of the demographic, to be honest, but we're about 50%, and then you have people from the entire subcontinent constantly moving here, finding jobs and living here in the UAE. You know, it's a tax-free economy, and it's pretty well developed as well. So, it's not. I wouldn't say that's difficult. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity over here as well, and this is also at the same time, while being pretty well developed, it's still a growing market as well. So there's it's especially for Indians. I mean, because we're apparently I was just reading about this yesterday. We're apparently the number one trading partner for the UAE in India. So I think you know, people from India constantly keep coming back and forth, and there's people who work from India while they're employed with a company in the UAE and vice versa as well.
And so, vice versa, yeah.
So there's tons of people coming, and it's not difficult. It's pretty simple, and visa regulations are easy. You know, anybody can get a visit visa. Anybody can just, you know, come just visit. It's simple. You know, most people who come and visit, they decide, all right, I'd like to find a job over here, and you know, they spend a couple of months, they look for a job, they find a job, they decide to stay.
Before I get into the media side of your life though, I'm curious how many languages you speak.
I speak, as of now, I speak English, Hindi and Tamil. So that's where I'm from. I'm South Indian. I speak three.
Tamil?
Tamil, yeah.
There's 40 or 50 kind of regular, widely spoken languages in India? And then there's really hundreds of dialects or something?
Yes, there's tons of languages. I mean, my wife speaks a different... My wife actually speaks about 7 different languages, to be honest.
Yeah.
My mother-in-law speaks about 15 different languages. Let's put it like that. It's wild. Pretty well...
And then what's the main language in Dubai or the UAE?
Well, depends. I mean, you know, most of them speak Arabic, as in a lot of the Arabs, of course, they speak Arabic.
Sure.
There's a lot of people coming in from Middle Eastern countries as well, right? So there's people coming in from Saudi, Egypt, and Lebanon, and Qatar, and Kuwait, and Bahrain. There's a lot of people coming in from the Gulf Cooperation Council, that's what it's called. It's the GCC. So Arabic, and that itself is apparently, it's like... too many different dialects in the way they speak itself. But English, I think, is the most predominant language here in Dubai.
Yeah.
Because it's so expatriate driven that it's the most common language.
Sure.
Hindi is another one because of the huge Indian population over here. You know, if you know Hindi, you can get by talking to a cab driver, let's put it like that.
So let's kind of move that over to media now. Obviously, speaking English is a benefit. Is it true? Now, you're station sound, production, et cetera, on English-only stations, or do you work on other language format stations as well?
I work at Gulf News Broadcasting, and up until this time last year, we were just two English stations. One was Radio 1 and Radio 2. Radio 1's a CHR station, and Radio 2 is the more, you know, the hot EC station. Adult,
pretty much like it is in the UK?
Yes, very much like that.
Yeah.
But last year, we managed to get the license to operate on two more frequencies, and we started a Hindi station and a Arabic station, a youth Arabic station. Both of them are youth driven.
Mm-hmm.
So I have in effect kind of done very basic production for both Hindi and Arabic, to be honest, because you know, we did hire producers, and they're great producers. They're both really good. But you know, just to get them onto, you know, learning the ropes and trying to figure out, you know, essentially what sort of standards we set, mm-hmm. at Gulf News Broadcasting. I did some of the stuff. I wrote some of the script for in fact the entire initial copy for our Hindi station. I wrote it. Not particularly
good thing you speak Hindi.
Good thing I speak Hindi, but here's the thing. I mean, just because we're a Hindi station doesn't mean that we're doing our copy entirely in Hindi. We're actually doing, sure, a lot of it in English.
Yeah, okay.
Because
yeah.
Most Indians who are over here, they speak English. I mean, that's their natural language of choice, at least from what I think.
Before we get too much further, though, what is your official title there, just so I make it, you know, proper?
I am senior production engineer. That's what I am.
Okay.
that's my title there.
Over your four station group, basically, for Gulf Coast Broadcasting?
Gulf
News Broadcasting.
Gulf,
sorry.
News Broadcasting. Gulf News Broadcasting, yes. Because I recently ended up getting the senior tag. I was production engineer for till about June this year. I've been doing production there since 2009. So I was really lucky to get the job, to be honest. If you want to get into that right now,
well, let me start. So, did you actually get your degree? I know you went back to Dubai and you wanted to get your degree at university. Did you actually do that?
Yes, I did. I came here 2007 November. I finished the last year of my degree. I'm actually an audio student. So I studied at the School of Audio Engineering over here, the SAE Institute.
Excellent.
Which is pretty well known worldwide. And I did my first year diploma in Mumbai. And in order to finish the degree, I came to Dubai because it seemed like the closest option. And my brother was living and working here. So... and he supported me as well. I started my degree in November 2007. I came, finished that in 2008, around October. And in about a month from there, I was really lucky. I mean you've got to remember that this was, I think, the onset of the financial crisis as well. So,
sure.
Mm-hmm. I applied to a lot of companies, and... although I did get in through a contact, you know, I did get the opportunity to interview with the head of production at that time, and you know, she said that although you have little experience, I'm going to give you a shot. And do you know Pro Tools? I said yes, that's my DAW of choice. So there, mm-hmm. we have it, and and I went there, and I spent about a month just trying to figure it all out, literally like an intern. And at the end of that, they decided to offer me a job. So I continued. So it was just about the first week of January 2009. I had a great new year that year.
Yeah.
I did.
And you've been, and that was with Gulf News Broadcasting, and you've been there ever since?
I've been there since then, yes. So I do have a sort of a one-sided perspective as far as anything radio production is concerned.
I'll get a little more into the creative side and the technical side and all that. I don't know a lot about Dubai, but I do know that it had a booming economy. But in recent times, is it true that it has maybe there's been some issues there. I've heard, you know, stories of people just sort of abandoning ship, possibly having lost money. I'm just wondering, how does the economy feel to you in the media industry, especially, you know, a business that has to sell to businesses?
I'm guessing some of the stories that you've heard is true, because even I've heard those stories. I don't have like a, you know, real factual incident to be able to prove it with.
Oh, okay.
But I've heard those stories as well. I'm guessing it is true. I mean, it was a really tough time, because I mean, when Dubai was booming, it was a lot of it was riding on the real estate industry, and the real estate industry is the one that really crashed everything.
Sure.
So a lot of people just. Sorry, a lot of people just, you know, they just abandon the place and they quit. And I've heard stories of people literally parking their cars at the airport with the keys in.
Well, a big article, for example, you'll find, you know, $100,000 Lamborghinis and just like luxury cars like that just abandoned places because people that had, you know, millions quickly had nothing. And instead of sort of trying to figure it out there, they just left. But I'm not saying that's rampant there, but I didn't know if it's impacted your industry.
It did impact. It wasn't a very visible impact, to be honest. I mean,
okay.
Well, you know, now that we're seeing it, to be honest, I mean, from a financial perspective, I mean, because we've recently incorporated two stations, we're kind of, you know, on the down low as far as revenue is concerned. Not in a bad way. I mean, I'm sure it's going to pick up. But back in 2009, 2010, those were some of the best years. I mean, we were doing really well financially, as far as mm-hmm. I remember. At least as early as, at least up to about the middle of 2010, it was about, sorry, it was about around middle of 2011 and 2000, you know, and around the beginning of 2012 is when we started like kind of slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that had something to do directly with the financial crisis. I mean, the one thing that we faced was, you know, we didn't have as many real estate developers advertising with us. That's one thing. We didn't have too many.
That's good.
Yeah, but there were enough other players that were still, you know, spending money, and we cater a lot to the hotel industry over here, because everything's sure. about hotels and you know, fancy stuff like great breakfasts and pools. Sea views, mm-hmm. rooms or whatever it is, and you know, there's tons and tons of hotels over here, and they're probably the highest spenders as far as radio advertising is concerned as well. Some of the highest, if not the highest.
And what about the auto industry? Is that a big category for radio there?
Yes, definitely. Every industry, to be honest. It's not just a particular. It's just that the real estate industry hasn't really advertised much, at least from what I know. We used to sure. in fact, back in 2009, I remember we used to do a property show on radio too, and that just completely fell through.
I was going to say, I remember that's probably true in the States, at least in Dallas. We used to have a lot of the builders mm-hmm. advertise.
Okay.
I think a lot more, you know, home developments by X Company. And I think over time those decreased significantly. So it's probably similar. But let's talk a little more about the structure. So just I'm going to try and relate this to maybe some of our listeners in the States, because we're mm-hmm. kind of used to working in radio groups in a market where we have a 4 or a 5 or a 6 station cluster. So you work in basically a 4-station group in a market. Do you guys have, you know, one sort of GM or president of the market? And then do you have program directors for each station and multiple producers? Or how does the structure work creatively and management-wise?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much like what you just said. We have a GM, a station head, who's running the business. Basically, he's doing all the business related analysis, and he's mm-hmm. handling the sales and everything. I mean, he's the MD, in other words. He's the station head. That's his official designation. Station head. Under him, there are as of now 4 programming directors, one for each station. We've got 4 stations, and we also do sales and marketing representation for a 5th station. We're not doing the programming or the production for them, but we're doing the sales and marketing representation for them. And each station has their head, and they're the programming directors or whatever. We've got different other managerial designations. We got business development managers, and we got a sponsorship and promotions manager. Mm-hmm. I work with my wife, who is the marketing manager, and
she, of one station, or is she marketing manager of all four?
All five. She's marketing and promotions manager, as well as the operations manager for the entire company.
Oh, so, is that right?
Yeah. Right. She does the, I mean, all the you know, the traffic related stuff, the ads that come in from agencies and things like that.
You married up, man.
Yeah, I did. I planned it.
Now, what about on the production side? I know you're the senior production engineer, but do you do commercial production? Do you just focus on station sound? Do you call it imaging, or do you call it station sound? And do you have other imaging producers and commercial producers? How's that laid out?
Man, I do all the production for one station. I do all the production for Radio 2. There have been times when I've done production for the other stations as well, when, you know, if somebody's on holiday or on leave or whatever it is.
Sure.
I take on whatever station has been assigned to me as extra, but I do all the commercial production, the peripheral programming production, you know, the competition stuff, and literally anything that needs production is done by me for Radio 2.
Okay.
That's the one, yeah. So it all falls on my lap. So if it's a commercial, if it's imaging, if it's programming related, if it's even something as simple as taking the you know, getting the fuck out of a song, if I need to get the fuck out of the song, you know, if I need to edit it or whatever it is, you know, I need to you know, I'm called upon, I'm summoned, and I'm on the job there.
Is there a you for the other three stations that you guys control programming on as well?
Yes, we've got one producer per station. So
okay. You
know, we've got Dragos that does all the commercial and imaging.
Yep, I'm familiar with him.
Yes, and we've got Yusuf, who does Hayat FM, which is our Arabic station. And he does all the production as far as the commercial.
What's the name of that station?
It's called Hayat.
And what does Hayat mean?
Hayat means life, apparently, in Arabic. Yeah.
Okay.
And we've got Josh, which is the Hindi station, and that means energy and passion, apparently.
Okay.
Actually, not apparently. It actually means.
I was
going to
say, you know. Yeah, you know that.
I know that.
You should know that.
I do know that. It is Josh 97.8. So that means energy and passion.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's supposed to be the brand. And we've got Sachin Mugi that produces, does all the production for that station.
And how many of your on air day parts are live?
Pretty much all of it, except for some of the weekend stuff.
Pre-recorded shows or something? Or do you voice track? Do you have voice tracking there?
Yeah. We definitely do have voice tracking and everything. The infrastructure is very similar to how it would otherwise be back in. I mean, most people who are involved in, I mean, in radio over here are all expatriates. I mean, so they bring a whole load of experience from, you know, industries like the UK, Australia, New Zealand, US, and, you know, there's a lot of people from all these countries who are running our stations over here, who are running radio over here, who are involved with radio somehow or the other in a senior position, if not a mid-level position or whatever. So the system is essentially very similar to what I presume is like in the States, or, you know, Europe, in Australia, UK. So these guys bring a whole load of that wealth of experience over here, and they run the stations like that. They do, and we do have those. At least we aim for it. We have our telecommunication related and legal related restrictions, and we're also catering to such a wide market over here that it's hard to hit the nail on the head sometimes. It really is, I mean you've got to have a really brilliant idea for you to be able to do that, and, you know, to combine that with the needs of our advertisers, it's a difficult game to play over here right now in radio. It's not easy to get it right yet.
How many stations are you competing against in that market?
As far as the number is concerned, I believe there are about 30 radio operational frequencies over here.
And then how many are legit? You know, how many actually really pull down some good numbers and have big listenership?
There's quite a few. There's about four big networks that I know of in the UAE. That is, we have Abu Dhabi Media, which is, you know, the government owned you know, the capital's media network. They operate a few radio stations, but they're not.
While you're on that, that was actually where I was going to go next. Mm-hmm. But to expand on that, how popular or successful are the public stations versus the commercial stations? Because I know, for example, in the UK, it's vastly different than the way it is in the US.
I'm not entirely sure because the commercial stations are the only ones that we get research from. At least we get research reports for the commercial stations, and mm-hmm. more often than not, we found out that the Islamic radio stations over here have always been, you know, priority for a lot of people, because even though there's expatriates over here, especially from India and Bangladesh and Pakistan and Sri Lanka, and there's so many of them, there's a huge Muslim population over here, so Islamic listening is always high. There's a lot of people listening to AM as well. I know that every time I get into a cab, the guys over here are probably listening to AM, BBC for that matter, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of them from South India are listening to Malayalam radio station. Hindi radio listening is probably the highest because there are seven competing Hindi radio stations over here. At least seven or eight. You know, everybody wants a piece of the pie. So that, you know, because of the huge Indian population over here, Hindi radio listening is off the charts. There's a huge English radio listening experience over here as well for people, because we do have Virgin Radio and we have Channel 4. And that's what I was coming to earlier, is that there's networks and we have ADM, like I was saying, Abu Dhabi Media, which operates a few frequencies out of Abu Dhabi, and they have repeaters in different cities as well, in different emirates. So they have repeaters in Dubai. They have a repeater for one of their stations, which is Radio Mirchi. It's a Hindi station. They have in Abu Dhabi, Dubai, and in another offset of Abu Dhabi called Al Ain. They have a different frequency there, which is, and then you have Arabian Radio Network, ARN, which is predominantly based out of Dubai. It's the and they have about, right off the top of my head, I'm thinking nine stations. I'll have to start counting, but they've got three English stations. They got Virgin Radio, they got Dubai 92, which is a hot AC station. They've got Dubai I, which is a talk station. They've got a Tagalog station, which they just started about a year back, which is catering to the Filipino population over here. So, they've got a Hindi station, which is City 1016, it's an extremely popular station over here, and they've got a couple of Arabic stations. I'm presuming they've got a Malayalam station. They've got one Arabic station as well. And then you have another network, which is Channel 4. Those guys have got another five stations as well. And and again, you know, every network has, you know, the mix of stations. It's not like, you know, all of them. Unfortunately, like I'm presuming it would be in the States, but it's not style specific or format specific as far as music is concerned. It's more language specific.
Actually very different here.
Yes,
I would say.
Yes.
There are Spanish language stations. I mean, there's actually, depending on what market you're in, there's lots of language stations. But
yeah,
I think here generally we're targeting a demographic with a certain format of music.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of genre specific, isn't it?
Yes.
So you'll have top 40, you'll have adult contemporary, and you'll have rock, sure, and you'll have jazz, and you'll have, you know, classical, and it's brilliant. I mean, that's an ideal world, to be honest, but over here it's different. I mean, here we're we're doing different languages, more or less, and we always play the most popular music out of that's coming out of those countries, you know. So
it's kind of like they're all basically CHR stations for whatever language they're targeting.
Yeah, exactly what it is.
Do you have any American country stations there?
I'd start one online if I could.
No. But how many listeners do you think a country station would get in Dubai? 3, 4?
It's really hard to tell, man, because you know we do music research every day, other year, and every time we do music testing, it just feels like, you know, that this is a completely different target market that we're catering to, and it's kind of strange. Like, I think the one time I went for a music test, I went back in 2010, and rock, anything guitar driven was just tanking. I mean, it was just falling right off. Nobody wanted to listen to rock. Hated it.
It's been doing that over here for a few years. And rock radio is all but dead in America.
Oh, that sucks because I'm a rocker. But
it is bad times for rock in America.
Oh, that's not good news. but the funny thing is, just I think when we did another music test at the beginning of this year, rock was again showing up, and people suddenly wanted to listen to Nirvana's "Come As You Are" and some Green Day, and people just suddenly were back into that rock thing again. And the thing is, it's a floating market. So you have people that come and they spend a few years and they take off. So and then a whole new bunch of people show up, and again, it's sort of like a cycle. I mean, there is the rare dude like me who decides to stick around, but more often than not, you'll find people who just come by for some time, and then you know they're back again where they
back to their real life, wherever they started.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it is. I mean, a lot of people just come to Dubai with the idea of making an income which is tax free, and you know, send it all back, send it offshore, go back, you know, transfer all your excess savings, whatever you can make of it, back to India or, you know, wherever you're coming from. So I think some people do make the choice that they want to continue their lives over here. There are quite a few people that do that. Like, I'm one of those examples. But there are a lot of people that just come here to spend a few years and, you know, make whatever savings that they can, you know, maximize it, and then, you know, they call it a day and say, all right, I'm done with Dubai and I'm going to go.
Let's go back to, let's go back into the radio station, the creative side, and talk more about what you do.
Okay.
You said you're a Pro Tools guy. Are you a Mac guy or a PC guy?
I'm a Mac guy, man.
Yeah.
I recently did some work with at a studio where they were using PC, and I got to tell you, I'm sorry, I couldn't stand it. I was like, oh my god, I'm going from a Mac to a PC, which is deciding to throw its attitude on me, and I'm like, this isn't for me at all.
So where did you? I mean, you were actually highly educated in this whole thing, so you're actually probably working a little underneath your skill set, really, because you should be tracking big, you know, 100-track musical sessions, right? I mean, that's really what you're trained to do.
Sorry, I am trying to do that. I do produce music. Recently even I kind of got involved in the entire independent music scene over here in Dubai as well, because I am a musician. I first got into audio because I'm somebody who played the drums for about I've been playing the drums for about 11-12 years now. I play a little bit of guitar. I know music theory a little bit, and I've had a strong passion as far as music is concerned.
I always like to ask this. Sorry, I hate to interrupt. Although I do have to make a quick comment.
Yeah.
We're doing this on Skype.
Yeah.
I wish I had just simply recorded Skype. I can't believe how great the Skype connection is. I just wanted to comment. I mean, I've talked to people on the phone, landline phones, in the same state as me, and it was awful. and you're on the other side of the world 9 hours ahead of me. Anyway, I'm just real happy that this whole connection is working out nicely.
Yeah.
Anyway, musically though, being a musician, I've asked this of other people, how have, I'm sure it's helped you, how has it helped you become a better radio imaging producer, and what have you used it for to make yourself better, to make your stuff stand out?
You know, I'm always trying to figure out if that's a myth or not, to be honest, because I'm seeing it from that perspective, whether being a musician makes you a better radio producer. I've never practically or physically actually sat down in front of a piece which I'm about to produce and said, all right, I'm a musician, so I can belt this out. You know, so there's something about music which is kind of linear, if you know what I mean. It's like, all right, you know, everything in music is on a beat, it's on a tempo. You can maybe change it every now and then, maybe during the verse and chorus, and you know, you can change the beat and other things like that. Some of those concepts kind of apply to radio production as well. But what happens when you have a piece that's completely non-linear? I mean, when you have a script that, you know, requires that sort of an approach, where, you know, let's say a simple music image. I recently put up on that Facebook group, I put up a beat mix, and, you know, while a beat mix is kind of similar to producing music, is it essential is another question. So more often than not, you'll be phasing in and out of songs and using your transitions and other things, and you sit back thinking, this is not anything like music production, and mm-hmm. you know, you're just using a couple of whooshes and bangs and a voiceover, and you're using transitions for music. So I'm not sure how much of understanding music production truly applies. I mean, I'm pretty damn sure that there is some of it that applies. There's no doubt about that. There is a lot of it that applies, at least technically. So, you know,
but you're contending though that it doesn't necessarily give you a huge advantage, that you're using a different part of your brain when you're producing promos and sweepers, and being a musician might not actually have any major impact on that.
I'm not actively aware of it, if it is actually having an impact or not, because I'm not thinking about it from that perspective. I'm thinking about producing a good piece of imaging. I'm not mm-hmm. thinking about producing a good piece of music, and I think that there's a difference there somewhere.
But one of the rules that I learned long ago that actually I think has made my production a lot better is you always have to be thinking of tempo, you know, while you're producing, especially music-based production. So I'm sure you're doing that constantly. You know, you never just completely stop down promos on an off beat and then, you know, start them back up in a completely different BPM. You know what I'm saying? You stick to a structure.
I do stick to a bit of a structure, but I'm not actively thinking about it while I'm doing it. I'm going with the flow, to be honest. Maybe that's because I'm producing for a hot AC format where things need to be a little bit more chilled out. If I was maybe producing for a top 40 station and things can be, like, you know, banged in and out and you can have it all edgy and sharp and cutting edge or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
If in your face kind of production, if you want to do it like that, then you know, by all means you can. I mean, it really depends on what you want to do for that one particular piece that you're about to produce. I mean, I think you got to take each piece of imaging that you're doing as it comes.